This is the Saxo Market Call, the daily financial markets podcast, across asset classes and around the world.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It's Wednesday, 5th of July, 2023. Markets coming back from a U.S. holiday later today. We had a bit of a soft session overnight. There was a Chinese services PMI, this private Caixin services PMI, out at 53.9. Pretty big disappointment there versus the 56.2 expected and the 57 plus level from the prior month. And that's the lowest level since January. So some fresh frustration there on the status of the Chinese recovery. And the status, especially of the Chinese consumer. The renminbi also weakening quite sharply, and that was hitting Forex to some degree and the dollar to some degree overnight. Some of that reversed out in the early European trading today, but we're all waiting for this U.S. data this week. And Peter also waiting for incoming earnings season starting and kicking off next week. And just to my mind, I have to wonder, you know, we've talked a bit about the very easy financial conditions that are helping this rally with the Treasury general account rebuild not being a factor because of the repo facility. Financial conditions are just very, very easy here. It seems like there might be some risk, at least tactically, of some tightening financial conditions and maybe a bit of caution ahead of earnings season. But what do I know? It's been a fool's errand trying to counter this rally. And I put the NASDAQ there on slide two. But what are you looking for next steps here from this market?
Well, we are headed into the Q2 earnings season with very high expectations. One of those areas with low expectations are the banks. We'll talk more about that later in the podcast. But the note on the second slide there that banks and diversified financials have been rallying pretty hard here over the past week, together with the car industry and the component manufacturers in that industry, up 5%, obviously driven by this bonanza that we're seeing in the electric vehicle industry. I've put in on slide three a daily chart on the Chinese equity market versus Mexico, South Korea, India, Malaysia, Japan, Indonesia, and Vietnam. This is the so-called winners of the fragmentation game as the US and Europe are shifting away supply chains away from China. It was an interesting comment yesterday. A lot of things happening around China. So first, as we talked about, China introducing these export controls starting August 1st on gallium and germanium against Europe, key critical raw materials used for semiconductors and different space applications and military applications. It's this tit for tat. But as you know, as Bloomberg also argued, it will just, you know, accelerate the actions from the EU and Europe to find other supplies, including on their own continent. I think it's more about being satisfied with China doing this than being lazy, because I do think actually that both the US and Europe will hold deposit of these things. It's just about finding them. But obviously, and then you have your Biden administration talking about the cloud infrastructure. Industries, so Microsoft, Amazon, and Google have been part of a loophole in the export controls on AI chips, because a Chinese company can access these infrastructure players and then specify, I want a cluster with A100 NVIDIA chips or H100 chips, so thereby getting access to those chips regardless of the export controls and limits on it. So there is still a risk to NVIDIA, but there is also a growing risk to the cloud infrastructure companies that their growth could be hit from this this loophole being canceled. So the Chinese reopening, not going anywhere. They're still struggling. And Xi Jinping struck this very soft tone at the Shanghai conference yesterday after these export controls on Europe, that he wanted to find win-win relationships, and we should be careful on how fast we change these supply chains, etc. I really think this fragmentation game is biting China pretty hard here. And if we look at the stocks to watch, a couple of interesting stories to track. So Volvo confirming this bonanza in EVs. So June sales of battery electric vehicles up 346% year on year. We have Casino, which is a huge operator in France of hypermarkets and supermarkets, a company with almost 200,000 employees. They are carrying out a massive restructuring. Shares are down 30%. Shareholders are most likely going to be wiped out completely. They have 16 billion euros in net debt, and then EBITDA expected at 2.6 billion euros here in 2003. So they're running a pretty significant leverage, more than five times their operating earnings. And as Theo will know, in the fixed income, the corporate investment grade space, that is just too aggressive. And then the final news is that Meta is launching this new threats app in a bid to attack Twitter. So the chaos at Twitter is an opportunity for Meta to create a Twitter-like service, if you will, where you can just log in with your ordinary Facebook or Instagram account, and you'll be hit the ground running on this new app. Very interesting to see what that will mean for Twitter.
Yes, and interesting, the whole space. I mean, there was the attempt from the conservative side to start a politically sort of aligned new app to compete with Twitter after Donald Trump was banned from participating, that Truth Social. That hasn't really taken off. There's a brand new one that's getting a huge attention. I don't know how much it's going to be able to grow, but this so-called Spill, which is only on Apple, as far as I understand, they're trying to make an Android version of it. But the tendency is for these things to gel around one dominant platform. So yeah, it is interesting to see that battle. And then on the Volvo, I assume that has to be from a pretty low base, the 350% growth. And I think one of the interesting aspects there is Volvo being part of the Geely group, clearly sourcing a lot of these batteries, or at least I presume, straight from China. And those issues around the production of batteries is, and the carbon border tax is upcoming, all those things, how that ends up playing for that company. But let's roll forward to FX. What we're waiting for is this U.S. data and whether it's going to engineer some volatility. Again, I think given the backdrop here of extremely easy financial conditions, we have a pretty firm dollar. One of the reasons for that is that those Fed rate cuts that were priced in have just been really – there's been an acceleration in those cuts getting priced out of the curve for 2024 and even into 2025. Rather than we're necessarily taking the peak or the terminal rate for the cycle higher, it's just about pricing out eventual cuts. So that has supported to offset those very easy financial conditions, which tend to be very dollar negative. So the only way we get the way we get volatility here is if we get strong data and that dislodges that long end of the yield curve, and we get a breakout, let's say towards 4%, but especially if it goes higher for the U.S. 10-year Treasury benchmark, or if we get exceptionally weak data that starts to trigger concerns of a recession incoming, bad news being bad news, and financial conditions tightening from that direction. I'll tell you, I think I know which way you lean on things here. But let's have a look at what you want to talk about today there on slide 6. And the message is the same. The most attractive and obvious space is this very elevated front end of the curve for the fixed income investor. But any other perspectives you want to bring in here?
Yes, John. So we talked a lot about the inversion of the yield curve, but we never really tackled the risk-reward profile of the long part of the yield curve, and particularly of the 10-year U.S. Treasuries. And I'm going to take you on slide number 6. And what you can see here is that if you are buying 10-year U.S. Treasuries with a yield of 3.85% and you hold them over a year and the yield that doesn't change from here to 1 year time, you would just take your coupon of more than 3%. If the yields move higher to 4.6%, you will record a loss of around 2%. If the 10-year U.S. Treasury yield drops to 3.1% and you sell this bond in 1 year time, you will earn 10%. But the risk-reward profile of the short part of the yield curve is even better, in the meaning that you don't have much upside in terms of gains. And we can see if the yield moves to 4%, you would gain 6%. But if the yield from 4.9%, where it is now, moves by 90 basis points to 5.8%, will not lose money. You will gain 3%. And the same reasoning can go for the bonds and the chats. But I just want to be clear that this scenario, this kind of duration profile that we have for government bonds today is much different from the past, from the previous years, where the coupon was very low and was around 1% in the US and inexistent in bonds. And that's why we see a lot of demand still in 10 years US treasuries and is exacerbating the inversion of the yield curve.
It is a very interesting perspective there. And of course, what would make a mockery of our call to focus on the front end would be some sort of very ugly recessionary developments that actually, ironically, but crushes the long end of the yield curve back lower. And those were the big gains would be realized in such a scenario. But yes, certainly the much more positive yields there are making a huge difference in perspectives and risks in bond investing. Okay, let's roll forward to Earnings Watch. We have this back on the calendar for next week. As you indicated, the big banks starting to roll in at the tail end of the week and a couple things coming in ahead of that. How elevated to your mind, Peter, are these expectations for earnings versus what you suspect they might deliver? Or do you have any sense of what they might deliver?
Yeah, I think actually if you look at the chart that we have on slide 7 today, where I've shown the S&P 500 financial sector, the 12-month forward IPS estimates, these are constantly changing to expectations for forward growth, and you can see that big decline we had in March during the regional banking crisis, and earnings haven't really been recovered, or the earnings expectations have not recovered ever since. That's despite that. The troubles were most acute for a lot of the regional banks, and a lot of the large bank actually got a deposit inflow from what happened. Obviously the inversion of the yield curve is probably seen forward looking as not a great tailwind for U.S. banks. But I am actually surprised. I don't know what to make of it, John. It obviously also reflects that the U.S. economy, at least in real terms, have slowed down. But the nominal growth in the U.S. economy is still, like, the nominal GDP growth is still 7% in the latest reading. So I don't know. I mean, I have a sense, and also the strong reaction we have had over the past week. You know, it seems like some investors are playing this first week of the earnings season that the financial banks are surprised to the upside. I don't know where I'm probably leaning towards as well, that they could surprise to the upside. On the other hand, we still have, although this, as you said before we went on the podcast, the markets are just weird. They're just very, very different from what we have experienced before. It seems like a very unique environment. So I think it's very difficult to have strong convictions, but I'm leaning towards these large banks, at least JP Morgan and Citigroup and Wells Fargo could actually surprise to the upside on Friday.
Okay, and now I'm not sure of a good segue here, but we had this little heated debate about some data that's been being passed around about food prices and the cost of food and how much food is being consumed in France and whether that had anything to do with recent social unrest. And so you've brought some perspective in on that as well there on slide 8.
Yeah, because there's this chart which is coming from the French Statistics Office that are being circulated massively both on Twitter, on LinkedIn, etc., showing food consumption, inflation adjusted, tanking quite dramatically. I think 17% down from the highs. A lot of volume destruction there, and that is being linked. So that's the reason why we have the riots. But then, as we talked about yesterday, when you go through some of the French statistics, there have been a bump up recently in French consumer confidence. The unemployment rate overall for the economy is significantly below the long term average, and especially for young people. And the young people's unemployment rate hasn't been as low as it is now in 23 years. So and the nominal wages are up 7.5%, and spending overall spending is also still climbing in nominal terms, although in real terms it's going slightly down. We just talked about that the last time what I'm showing here on slide 8. I've taken this food consumption in real terms, and then I scaled it with the disposable income in France in real terms since January 1980. And the last time we had a significant change, or where French household spent more money on food, was from Q1 2018 to Q1 2019. There was a whole 100 basis point drop there in just four quarters. And back then, During that 1 year period, the economy actually grew 1.7% annualized in real terms and was accelerated into Q2 of 2019 before the economy slowed down. And then we went into the pandemic and everything was upside down. But I agree, it looks very dramatic. I suspect that there are three causes for this. That one of them is that the savings rates are extremely high in France. They have expanded 400 basis points during the pandemic and are still very high in France. And then there might be a big change in consumer habits. I don't think that's the only thing that can really explain why you're seeing this big shift. And I actually forgot my third reason, but that is the two main reasons I actually have for. So I don't link it to the rise. I just think that the third one was that food consumption, John, is probably the lowest hanging fruit. So if you take other countries like Denmark, also Germany. Denmark, I think we spent 9 to 10% of our household budget, disposable income, on food, and France was spending 15% as of just a few quarters ago. So it's maybe the French just realized that we can cut very easily down here without suffering a lot. I just want to paint a picture here that I don't think France is in deep trouble. I think the rise is driven by different dynamics and not this drop in food consumption.
All right. Always interesting to see how the different ways to approach the problem on statistics like that. Let's have a look at the macro calendar. It's heating up as we get into the back end of this week. FOMC minutes today, again, with the data reactive Fed. What are we really expecting from them? There is a considerable divide among some of the members and what they're saying on the need for further tightening, but it is the incoming day that we'll have to wait for. That's really starting up tomorrow with the jobless claims jolts, ADP private payrolls, and the ISM services, but really the Friday jobs report, unemployment rate, et cetera, will be the key focus there. And again, focusing on the long end of the yield curve and whether it goes higher on strong data or whether very weak data, if there is a weaker data picture developing, sees good news playing as bad news playing as bad news, or playing as hooray, that means the Fed's going to cut and we can indulge in further upside in the speculative space. So that's the reaction function we'll be looking for to this data, however the releases come out. And that'll be a wrap for today. So we'll be back tomorrow with the next Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter @SaxoMarketCall or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.